Hi, my friends at the Hashtag AmWriting podcast. This is Jenny Nash, CEO of Author Accelerator, and I'm here to tell you about an end-of-year bonus that we're offering for anybody who signs up for our book coach training and certification program by the end of the year. We have a lot of people that sign up at this time of year because new year, you know, everybody's like, I want to do something new. I want control of my time. I want to work in the world of books all day. And we have people that are doing book coaching as a side gig, and people who are doing it as a whole new career. It can work for so many different kinds of people in so many different kinds of circumstances. So if you've been thinking about this, if you've been listening to KJ talk about book coaching, or maybe you did the summer challenge and worked with one of our book coaches and you're thinking that this is for you, we would love to have you join us. You can check out the bonus at bookcoaches.com/writing. All the details are laid out there. There's some juicy extras that we're throwing in for this special bonus, and we would love to have you join our community.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay.
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three. Okay.
KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag AmWriting, the weekly podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, fiction, non-fiction, pitches, proposals. This is the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation, and you can find my work at the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Atlantic.
I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the 24-time USA bestselling author of a bunch of romance novels, currently in a cage match moment with a book called The New Guy that will come out at the end of February. And, you know, one of us will win this cage match within the next 3 days.
My bet is on Serena, and I am KJ Delantonia. I am the author of the novels The Chicken Sisters and In Her Boots, the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent. And I just pressed send on what are probably the final pre-copy edit revisions to Playing the Witch card, which will be out sometime in 2023. Fallish, summerish, woo-hoo! Late summerish. Anyway, woohoo! Yay me! Even if this pops back at me, it's going to pop it back at me with like three comments because we have really, sort of worked this down into a fine, pulp.
Can I make a really early bid to name the sequel?
Sure. I've got a post-it here that has a note on it. So tell me yours.
Resting witch face.
Ooh, that's good. I kind of think it might have been done, but I love it. I'm writing really it good. Down.
I like
resting.
It.
Resting. Yeah.
Just in case.
Yeah, just in case. I like it. All right, so today, the three of us have thoughts. So I've been listening to the Shit No One Tells You About Writing podcast, and they have this, which I enjoy, and they have this fantastic segment called Books and Hooks, and it's where they review people's credit query letters. And I often think that hook is sort of really hard to, I always found it a little hard to figure out what it meant until I figured out that it means a lot of things. And basically what it means is that the book is graspable. And some of the reasons that I feel like I understand this now is that, The Chicken Sisters had a hook. Playing the Witch card has a hook. In Her Boots does not really have a hook. If you ask me to explain that book, it's going to take me 2 minutes and be kind of, it's a great book. People really love it. It's super fun. But explaining it, there's no hook. It's not hooky. So I vowed to Serena recently that I would never again write a book without a hook. And she wholeheartedly agreed. So that is the topic that we are discussing today. Never again writing a book without a hook and how not to make that particular
and
mistake.
And I'm so here for this conversation because as unbelievably frustrating as I find it to write fiction, like I cannot begin to tell you how agonizing and horrible this process is for me. The only reason I am persisting with it is A, I really like the character, but B, I feel like there's a really cool hook in this book, and I need to see it out. So, but on, I also
just want to agree. I know you're not talking about this book yet, but the hook is solid. Like, you win that already. So, you know, pat yourself on the head.
Well, the other thing I want to talk, want to make sure we talk about is the perception of hook and words like trope and hook and that kind of stuff and people's perceptions of that word, because that's something you run up against a lot, Serena.
Yeah. So a few years ago when I was going to conferences pre-COVID, you would often see a talk called like writing the high concept romance. And so that's another word people throw around. High concept means like a big hook, essentially. And a very high concept is like The Matrix. So unbelievably hooky that you're like, you know, what if you woke up and the whole world you live in is a lie? You know, like that kind of giant hook. But to have a good hook for your novel, you don't have to be all the way at The Matrix level. Sometimes the hook can be a very familiar trope, just presented in a slightly new way that when the reader reads it, they're like, oh, yeah. You know, for example, I want to use this book as an example.
Oh, great. Perfect. But before we get into examples, I just want to like sort of lean on this. I used to think a hook was one thing and that it was that. What if you wake up and the whole world is a lie? What if you wished you were big and you were? But it's actually, I mean, it really is literally a hook. It's something you can hang the reader's understanding and excitement about the story on. So a hook can be, what if you wake up and you were big, like the story. But a hook can also be, I don't know, Peter Pan meets The Matrix. That's not a very good one, but it's something, or maybe it is, I don't know, somebody run with that. But it's something that helps people to understand, like, bam, one sentence, you know what this book is about.
Right. And Jess also mentioned the vocabulary question of how is a trope different from a hook? And of course, a trope is a familiar storyline, like Fish Out of Water or Wake Up Married in Vegas. So sometimes the hook in the first bit of the book description on the back of the book is a very familiar trope. But to be truly hooky in 2022, you need that familiar trope to have a little bit of a fresh twist on it, whatever thing,
right,
you know, makes that graspable, like, oh, it's Wake Up Married in Vegas with aliens or what, you know.
I think the problem that I have is with the perception of that word, that high literary fiction doesn't need to rely on things like tropes or hooks or that kind of thing. It's about the art, Serena. It's about the language and it's about the character. And if you don't, that somehow there's this divide between like things that rely on those tropes and hooks and things like that that are commercial as opposed to the things that are art. I'm wrong.
Yeah, that doesn't go very far with me. I mean,
no, it may be art, but it's these tropes and hooks that get a reader to come along for the ride.
Yeah.
How about this concept? The reason you love a book, the reason you pick up a book are not usually the same reasons. So I would argue that you need a hook to pick up a book by somebody you've never heard of before.
Right.
But the books that you end up pushing into people's hands are usually the ones that have beautiful writing and a wonderful character. So you need both of those things. And where we as working authors tend to stumble is not that we forget how to write well one day, but rather that we forget that when it's time to market that book, if it doesn't have a super strong hook, we are going to be very sad.
Yeah, and this is, again, how we came to this. I would actually say that of people that have talked to me about, for example, The Chicken Sisters and In Her Boots, people love In Her Boots more in many ways. But The Chicken Sisters has a hook. You know, it's a reality. It's two competing fried chicken restaurants in a reality show with sisters who end up competing against each other. There you go. Bam, you know what that is. That's calling. It either calls to you or it doesn't. And I just didn't put that. I could have. That's the other piece of this, is you can fix this. Like, if you have a book and you're worried that it's not hooky enough, it may not be easy. It may not be the easiest fix, but you can probably lean on something that can become the hook of this if you catch yourself in time, as I did not. So yeah, a hook without a book without a hook is not a bad book. It's just a book that's harder to put into the hands of readers.
Right. So can we do some examples now? Because examples are fun. All right. So the one that I was really itching to talk about for a second was this one, A Merry Little Meet Cute by Julie Murphy and Sierra Simone. And I haven't actually read this book yet, but I have it, the paperback right here in my hands. And to me, it represents an adorable hook. It's an adult film star who has been asked to go star in a Hallmark movie. And the hero is her childhood crush from a boy band. And to me, that's just like the perfect, like, romance hook. So it's not The Matrix, like the whole world isn't a lie. It takes place in a very familiar world that I recognize. But, you know, adult film stars don't usually star in Hallmark.
And that's
movies.
Just, that's done. I mean, it's the hook is those words at the end of which some people say, sold.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I'm in.
Some people will also say, just no. But that's okay, because that's the book, you know? If you're out on porn stars starring in, you know, sappy, beloved, lovable holiday movies, then you're out on this, and you should be out on this. You don't want people to pick it up who are like, oh, but I hate, you know? Yeah, so that the hook serves that purpose.
Can I do another one?
Yes, please.
Yeah, give us another one.
Examples are fun. Okay, how about The Bromance Book Club?
Oh, gosh.
So this is a hook that when these books started coming out, every other romance novelist I know was like, oh my God, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a group of guys who gets together to learn how to be, you know, better boyfriends and partners by reading romance novels to each other. I mean, it's just delightful. So, you know, these are the things we strive for.
Yeah, that one is just dreamy. And I know, as I'm thinking about, a funny thing, a high concept hook can become sort of a regular hook later. So for example, Groundhog Day, when it came out as a movie, and movies just make easier examples, was a high concept hook. Now, Groundhog Day, but it's a teenager in Brooklyn whose father is sick. Which is Emma Straub's most recent book. And I guess she's commercial / literary. So there you go, art people. That's more of a just straightforward hook. Or Groundhog Day, but she's snowed into her parents' cabin with her crush, which is, that's a Christina Lauren book. I don't remember.
Right, In a Holidays.
In a Holidays, that's it. The thing that's a high concept, you know, big, but it's Jennifer Garner and she's a teenager. I mean, that's not, you know, it's not high concept anymore. But,
it
works. It tells people what it is and whether they want to
read also, it. For me, I know, for example, Emily Henry's Beach Read was like the classic for me, which was the minute you told me that this was about a literary fiction author and a romance author, and they dare each other to write in the other genre, I'm like, oh my gosh, right there. I'm so in. And I also know right off the top of my head everyone I'm going to recommend that book to, because that hook in particular will appeal to so many people that love what I love about being a writer. So that was an easy one for me, and there was no way I wasn't going to read that book once I knew what the hook was.
And if you don't fulfill your hook, that's often when a book is disappointing.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you don't give readers the thing that you promised, if you've promised Groundhog Day, but it's not really, you wake up every day, but there's really no town travel, it's just like that it feels like it's always the same day. People are going to be mad.
So there's also something we should mention at this juncture about the hook versus the central conflict of the story. And they are not necessarily the same thing. Like, you can write a fabulous hook that describes what just happens to be the setup for your book, but what's actually gone wrong in the world and what problems need to be solved and what people need to learn and grow is not actually captured in that hook. So the yep. hook is like the movie trailer, but when you read, you know, when you go and watch the film, you're going to get a whole lot more out of that experience than the hook can give you. And that, to me as a working novelist, is a discomfort that I, you know, frequently experience. So I'll be carrying around really excellent hooks for years. Like, every time I think of a great hook, I scribble it down. But, and then there's always this moment of, oh, but then what happens? and that's pretty much where I live.
Yeah.
Oh, but then what happens? You know, and that's yeah. the real work of the job. So, you know, you need both of those things.
Hooks tend to be plotty. So it's almost like that other stuff, the drama of the book, the thing the character needs, the arc, the advancement. Like, I mean, you have to have, like, that's almost a given. It's like that's the cake, and, you know, we're frosting it with the other stuff. Well, that's not the best
well,
metaphor,
actually,
because we need the other stuff to wash through.
This
it,
is but. Where my recommendations fit into that comment, because I brought nonfiction hooks.
Ooh,
and what
cool.
I discovered from trying to figure out which books to bring to this episode, I realized that in, you know, it's so funny when there's, you know, when you're talking about titles in fiction, you don't have to worry about subtitles. But in nonfiction, we often we're doing more agonizing over the subtitle than the title itself. And often the subtitle serves as the hook. So I present a book I am loving right now by Bethany Brookshire called Pests: How Humans Create Animal Villains. So the reason that this subtitle is a hook for me is that, and obviously, you know, our listeners know I'm a big nonfiction geek. I love anytime someone challenges my perception of the world as I perceive it. You know, I wrote this short piece that didn't get published that I'm still going to do something with about invasive species. Like, who am I to say whether something is invasive or not? That kind of idea. I like playing with that stuff. And so the idea that something is a pest, that is a human imposition on, you know, how we look at animals. So I know right from the get-go here how humans create animal villains, that my perceptions of certain animals that might make me feel oogie are all about me. And I welcome that introduction into thinking differently. But also, it's this to me, Pests: How Humans Create Animal Villains, is a perfect nonfiction title, because it automatically gives me a really cool title, a hook, a title that is easy to, you know, and this is also, I was thinking about covers and stuff too. This is an incredibly good cover too, if you see the cover, but that subtitle right there is the hook for me. And then my second one that I wanted to bring to this is another book I'm absolutely loving by Leila Philip. It's called Beaverland: How One Weird Rodent Made America. And it is very much about, when, like, it's not hyperbole to say that this one weird rodent made America, because beavers actually really do shape our landscape. But for me, both of those subtitles, How the Weird Rodent Made America and How Humans Create Animal Villains, those two are hooks that I'm all in for. And those are nonfiction hooks. Somehow in this book, they're going to address that, and they're going to answer those questions for me about what they mean by that. And that's what I love about nonfiction subtitles as hooks.
Yeah, last week, or a few weeks ago, depending on order of podcast, which I've kind of forgotten, but recently, I interviewed Allison Gilbert, the author of Listen World: How the Intrepid Elsie Robinson Became, and here's your hook, America's Most Read Woman. But what she is, that's actually not the hook. The hook is that she's, here we go, the hook's on the back. The first biography of Elsie Robinson, the most influential newspaper columnist you've never heard of. So this woman wrote, and if you listen to the episode, you know, but she was like, she wrote for every paper in the country, thousands of columns from like 1930 through 1958 or something. and who's, have you ever heard of Elsie Robinson? I'd never heard of Elsie Robinson. So that's your hook.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
that's funny because that reminds me of the hook I came up for, a book I absolutely do not want to write, but I found out remember a while back I talked about the fact that I got to go to Laura Palooza, which was the Laura Ingalls Wilder research but they're dedicated to Laura Ingalls Wilder. And I found out so much about Rose Wilder and found out that she is this incredible character. And I've never read a really good nonfiction book about her, but there are so many hooks that I could tack onto that. Like, you know, the people like who really wrote a lot of the Little House on the Prairie books. Some of that is attributable to Rose Wilder. And I would love to read that book. So someone go out and write that book, please.
So this is kind of what we talk about when we talk about how you want to be careful never to promise to write a book that you don't actually want to write. Right. If you come up with something really hooky like that, you can sell it.
Yeah, it's really tempting.
You might even be able to sell a novel on a proposal, which, I mean, usually you can't do as a debut novel, so it's probably not going to work for that. And selling novels on a proposal is a topic for a future episode. But the point is, you get something super hooky like this, you know, you can sell it in a sentence, which is the whole idea, but be sure you actually want to write it.
You know what's a really good example of that is the book The Chain that came out a couple years ago. We've talked about it a couple times because it had the most unbelievable hook, which is essentially, you know, your kid gets kidnapped and it turns out the only way to get your kid back is to kidnap another kid and then have the chain continue to move along. And right away you say, oh my gosh, that's amazing. That's an incredible hook, that book as well.
I thought it was murder.
Kidnap.
Huh.
Because then if you...
I wasn't going to read either.
If you have
because the promise is you're going to get your kid back if you just kidnap that next kid for money. Right.
And so that's a good example of a trope with a twist, right? Because kidnap is a pretty common domestic suspense taking off point. And so that author was like, wait, I can do you one better here.
What's so crazy about that is you hardly ever get to see the coolest thing about that book, I thought, was that the parents, those grieving parents who are missing their children, have to also become the bad people who have to steal someone else's child in order, you know, so you hate them and love them at the same time. It was such a great, by the way, that book was by Adrienne McKinty.
It's a really brilliant.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant hook. And again, because it's a hook and now it's a thing, you could use it now and be like, it's The Chain meets, I don't know, Bones.
Yeah, well, what's even better about that is that book had, not only did that book have a great hook, it had a news hook that sold the crap out of that book because that writer was just about to quit writing and Don Winslow helped him and blah, blah, blah. And the guy was just about to give up. So there's a whole great news story. So actually when it comes to what's really interesting is when it comes to publicists and getting your work out there, the first thing a publicist wants is what's the hook, what's the story, not necessarily the book that you're selling, but the story of how, you know, of how this book came together or the story of you as an author. And that was like the key to getting placement for addiction inoculation is what's the hook behind the book in order to make it newsworthy. So the hooks happen on lots of levels. But anyway, I want to hear more examples if we have them.
Well, that is the kind of hook to be careful of because it's not enough of a hook to sell the, like you want to have both
what you're
talking about there. Like that a publicity hook is a different thing. I was just thinking about how the book, The Plot, like the hook is that there's a hook that's so exciting that anyone who writes it is going to sell the book.
Except I didn't think that the hook is so good. The hook is so good that I just read that entire book so worried that it couldn't be good enough to fulfill the promise of the hook. And that's the other problem. That's the time that a lot of books will fail. And I think one of you said it earlier, is you have to deliver on that hook as well. It's just not the hook itself. It's the delivery that's going to sell that book or not sell that book.
Well, that was a thing I remember debating about The Plot. I actually don't remember. So the Plot is a book by, I think, Jean Corlett. I'll look it up. And the whole premise was that somebody came to his writing teacher with a plot that was so amazing, which really means a hook that is so amazing that the writing teacher felt like anyone who wrote it was going to be successful, as did the writer, I think.
Yeah, but
then
the
writer disappears. Right, the smug writer. And then the writer disappears, so the writing teacher writes the book, which really, I mean, honestly, fair enough. I mean,
yeah,
hooks are the only like possibly stealable thing out there.
Yeah, and you're right. That is Jean Huff Corlett's, by the way.
Yeah. So and the thing that was the plot, many writers did sit down and debate, well, was that really good enough to hold that? But it didn't matter because the hook was that there would be such a thing. The hook wasn't that this is the thing. So
As I read it, my worry was that they weren't going to tell me.
I wondered the same thing.
But then they did, and I thought that author really landed it. I really did.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that one, I agree. That one landed.
I've been reading, you know, so many thrillers this year because I've been focused on suspense. And so I've done a lot of, like, personal testing. What hooks, what tropes am I interested in, and are they successful? And of course, so I'm seeing a lot of like trends for right this second, what are people publishing in domestic suspense? And there's a lot of like going away for the girls' weekend and somebody dies. So to me, there will be an audience of people that love that hook, that they're all in for going away for the girls' weekend and somebody dies. But that person's not me. Like, I'm a little tired of that description. So you can definitely see like eddies in the stream, you know, where little groups of hookiness are forming and then breaking. And then I've been reading a lot of Karen Slaughter because she is very talented, and I'm always satisfied by her books, and they always have a lot of empathy and give me somebody to root for. So I have all my personal reasons for why I like Karen Slaughter. But then I found one of her books to be particularly hooky to me. And so the flap copy for that one is like, you think you know your mom as well as you could know anybody. But then one day at the mall, something happens and your mom's reaction betrays the fact that she's like a tactical guru. And she like stops a killing. And yeah. And I was like, whoa, okay. Loving the concept here. That's the hookiest one. I'm all in for this book. And I did indeed enjoy it. But then I recognized that that is the one of hers that they made, you know, a Netflix out of, or, you know, some, yeah. And so it's just the power, like all of her books are equally great. They have amazing twists. They're well-written. They're amazing. But the one with the hookiest hook is the one that became the big splashy book to film deal. So that was not
lost. Do you remember the title for that one?
Yes, it's Pieces of Her by Karen Slaughter. It came out in 2019. And then this year she published another book about that same character that I also thought was fantastic. And it's called Girl Forgotten. And they're both amazing.
So when we're sitting around looking at our libraries, I struggled with what a hook was because I felt like the hook was the plot, or the hook had to be the Matrix-like thing, or the big, the movie, you know, I Wish I Were Big thing. But really the hook is in many ways can be as simple as the thing that makes you pick up the book. And sometimes it's the whole book, sometimes it's not.
Well, I mean, that's the magic of flap copy. I mean, that's really, and I personally, and I know a lot of people have talked about this, but I personally love to sit there at bookstores and watch people pick books up and try to figure out what it is that captures people. And, you know, like the Beach Reads book, the minute I read the flap copy on that one, I'm in. Or the minute I read the flap copy on the Karen Slaughter book, I would be in. And I think that's why you have talked about this in the past, KJ. And actually, Serena and KJ, you both do this. And Jenny Nash talks about it a lot, is writing your flap copy before you ever get into the book. Because the flap copy is the essence of the book. So how better to distill that for you and laser focus on whatever your hook is, than to write that flap copy from the beginning. Plus, it helps you hone your elevator pitch for your book.
Definitely. That's the corollary to I'm never writing another book without a big hook, is I'm never writing a book that I don't sit down and at least take a stab at the flap copy before I write it.
Yeah, it's really important. And if you find yourself trying to stuff two different things into the flap copy, that's a bad sign. That's, you know, two major plot points. But on the other hand, it's very possible, like you said earlier, Serena, the setup, a lot of time when you look at the flap copy on the back of a book, all you get is the setup. All you get of the Chicken Sisters on the back of the book is the setup. The setup should work. But if the setup sort of suddenly drops off and flips into something else, then that's what makes this challenging.
You know, I think it's, if you're trying to cram two things into the flap copy, it could be a sign that you have two hooks and you just have to pick which one gets to be the star. You know, sometimes that's a quality problem.
That's true. And you might need to just get somebody else to pick.
Yeah, well, I actually did this. I had written flap copy for my February 28th book called The New Guy, from both characters' perspectives, and they both have slightly different story problems. You know, one has one conflict, but you hear from both of them in the book. So I wrote one in each of their voices, and I really could not choose. One was really short, and one was longer, but I thought it was a little sexier. And I made two web pages because I'm such a total nerd. One of them had Gavin on the left and Hudson on the right, and the other one had Hudson on the left and Gavin on the right. And then I made a short link that was A-B split. So if you clicked on it, it would deliver you to one of those two pages, but not both. And they each had a form at the bottom. And all the form said was, which of these two would make you click faster? And so then I ended up getting, I believe, 600 responses, because I posted this, hey guys, in my reader group, help me decide.
You're amazing. You are amazing.
Friend Lauren Blakely and I were sure we knew which of these was the better one, but I just wanted to test. And would you believe that by a margin of 60 to 40, or maybe even like 62 to 38, everybody chose the other one?
Wow.
Yeah. And I did learn that on the page where you, it didn't matter which page you read it on, like people slightly favored the first thing they read. Like if they were sold after the first one and then they read the second one, they would sometimes still pick the first one. So like one guy performed better on his page than he did in the other one, but it was still a landslide.
Right. That's why you had him on one on the right or the left.
Right.
Yeah. First I had a hard time following that.
Yeah. I needed to be able to see if there was a bias for which one you read first. Because I'm crazy like that. But it turned out it did matter, but not that much. And one character's point of view won by a landslide. And it was super fun. And at first I was like making excuses like, well, I still need the story hook from the other thing. And that, then I came to my senses and I was like, nope, we're going to
slap yourself around a little bit.
Yep. We're going to give them what they want.
Yep. Yeah. Give the readers what they want.
Did anyone ever articulate for you why? And did it become clear to you why?
Yes and no. Because the one that won was shorter. And I thought it didn't have as much conflict, but it was in the voice of the professional athlete. And I should really have already known that that's one thing that my readers are there for. Like they love that about this, about the one world I've created in those athletes. And so they kind of wanted his story because, you know, he's the famous guy and they wanted that. Yeah. But also people said it was so punchy, like the short version. It got to the point faster, I guess, and that turned out to matter.
I was thinking about this the other day, is that, you know, when you have Serena has this place called Serendipity on Facebook, and she gets so much feedback on her books from her fans, you get so much really important information back from your fans. It's really cool to have that level of engagement that 600 people will go and like fill out, you know, a little thing about which perspective they like better. I think that's really cool.
It was really cool. And it didn't ask for anything. Like, it doesn't ask for your email address. It's just like, here, which one do you like? It's anonymous. I can't, you know. There's a dark side, which is, of course, I get feedback on literally everything I, you know, it's like, I'm going to announce a new book and somebody will be like, ooh, I hope it's, you know, this never writing. And I'm like, okay.
It's not.
The cool thing, though, about giving your readers the ability to give some input in is that when they get to see the results, and it may have had something to do with something they suggested, there's a when we're recording this, there's a tweet. I was just recently on a big recovery podcast, and one listener in particular had suggested me as a guest, and my episode went live, and that person who suggested it is like all over Twitter going, this was my idea, and they're so excited about it. It's really
that's
funny.
Cool.
Yeah.
I was just looking around at my bookshelves because sometimes the hook is in the title, and the best example I can come up with of that one is Dial A for Aunties, which is it's a murder. You know right away it's going to be a murder mystery that's got. And aunties signifies either there's a couple of different ethnicities where aunties are super important, and also that it's going to be funny. Like,
yeah, and we have the historical perspective of Dial M for Murder, so there's already that sort of like,
that's what makes it a hook.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what makes it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Dial A for Aunties would be meaningless.
Right, exactly.
But that's what makes it hooky.
That's good.
I was trying to see if I could see any, because I have one in mind where the hook is in the title, but it is someone who has not finished the book yet, and so I cannot. It's not me.
Actually, a friend of mine, Phyllis Fagel, who wrote this amazing book called Middle School Matters. She has a new book coming out next year called Middle School Superpowers. And I love the hook there because so few people tend to think of middle school age kids as having anything great about them. And so I love that she turns that perception on its head. And she's like, No, let me tell you what their superpowers are. That to me is also a hooky thing that would
right.
draw me in. Yeah.
So when you know instantly what you're going to get from the title, that is in itself a hook, and sometimes can almost like sort of guide you into writing the book when you find the right thing.
Yeah.
So to sum up, as I'm going to title this episode, friends don't let friends write books without hooks. So. If you cannot explain your book to your friend or one of us in two sentences or less, try again.
And also, I guess the other moral of the story, at least where Jess is concerned, is that sometimes seeing out that hook or you know, getting that thing written, even though it's hard, sometimes it's worth seeing where the hook goes. And that's where I am right now. We'll see what happens later.
Yeah,
much
you
later.
Think of a good hook, and then you gotta live it out. All right, so let's pause for a sec, and then let's talk about what we've been reading. Fellow writers, I've got exciting news from Author Accelerator. Applications for Author Accelerator's new two-year scholarship program for Black, Indigenous, Latinx, or other people of color open this month. The Author Accelerator team developed this scholarship as a way to amplify diverse voices and perspectives that are under-recognized in the publishing world. The newly launched Author Accelerator Book Coach Certification Scholarship provides 1 year of professional mentorship and feedback for up to 3 students of color as they complete the Book Coach Certification Program, and 1 subsequent year of career coaching and mentorship as they launch their business. If you're interested in applying or want to learn more, the scholarship window opens November 15, 2022, and will close January 15, 2023. The program itself will kick off in March 2023. To learn more, visit bookcoaches.com/equity. All right, Jess, I know you were super anxious to share with the peoples.
Well, frankly, I put two of them in as my hooky examples, which again was Leela Phillips' Beaverland and Bethany Brookshire's Pests, How Humans Create Animal Villains. But I also have to give a shout out. About a year and a half ago, and I have to, full disclosure, I know this person, Christine Keneally wrote an article that did really, that was just really wonderful about an orphanage in Vermont where some really shady stuff took on, including some deaths of some kids. And her new book, which will be out in a second, I'll look. Oh, won't be out till March. But it's called Ghosts of the Orphanage. And it's a story of mysterious deaths, a conspiracy of silence, and a search for justice. And I am loving this book. If you like nonfiction mysteries, if you like historical, it's not so much historical, but if you love nonfiction mysteries, Ghosts of the Orphanage by Christine Keneally, put it on your to-read list, pre-order it. It's fantastic.
I read that article and it was nearly book length.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
It was amazing.
It was a very natural fit for it to become a book, I think, because I still had... It was long enough to begin with, and then I still had, there were still questions to be answered, I think. There was still room for more information.
Sure.
And sometimes, because it really irks me when someone has a great article, even a long-form article, and they're like, oh, well, let's fill it out and make it a book. This is definitely a book that should have been written, and I'm glad she expanded on that article.
How about you, Serena? What you got?
Well, again, on my Karen Slaughter kick, I just read Pieces of Her, which has beautiful writing, and it's a book about women becoming who they need to become to survive, and it was just great. And then I also this week read The Night Shift by Alex Findlay. He's a successful thriller author, and he again gives you somebody to root for right from the start of the book. There were four POVs in this book. Four different characters get to talk. At 33%, I wrote down my guesses for what was going to happen. And I was pretty accurate in figuring out, but it didn't matter. Like when I got to the end of the book and I went back and looked, I first of all didn't remember that I had what I had predicted. And I didn't care because it was just very satisfyingly rendered and it was just terrific. So that's The Night Shift by Alex Findlay.
Well, I have been enjoying, I've been hitting a few of the Christmas romances. And so I read A Merry Little Bromance, which is by Lisette K. Adams, who writes the Bromance Book Clubs. And it is that, it's that time in the series when we've hit the holidays. I had a good time with it. The bros are always super fun. Similarly, I read All I Want for Christmas Is You. And, you know, those are both hooky because it's like, one is like bromance, but Christmas. And the other one, All I Want for Christmas Is You, it's a reality show competitors in country music. And that's kind of, again, I didn't tell you much about the book right there. You don't know what the conflict is. You don't know what's wrong with them, but you know it's a romance. You know there's country singers. And there's a reality show. So you're saying I'm in or I'm out. So those were fun. And then something that I like fell over adoring and just immediately recommended to multiple friends is something that's been around for a while. It's called Witchmark by C.L. Polk. It's the first of a 3-book series. So yay, because they're all out. And it's actually not easily hooky. I guess the hook would be that in a pair of witch siblings, one witch has to be enslaved to the other to give the more powerful witch more power. But in this book, the less powerful sibling escapes. It's not, like I said, it's actually not super hooky. The title doesn't tell you much, but what I can tell you is that I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. It was just
and that's all that matters in the end.
Fun.
Yeah. That's all that matters.
All right. So that's it. Go find your hooks, people, and write your books.
And jot them down when you think of them, because as we all know, sometimes you forget that stuff. Now that I'm in my 50s, I'm like, What was that really good idea I had for a book yesterday that I didn't write down? Oh, it's gone forever. It'll never come back. Anyway,
that will never be written. Before we take it out, let me remind you kids that we are a podcast that was run on Substack. So if you sign up for our weekly emails, you can do one of two things. You can support the podcast by contributing a little bit into our coffers, which is what pays for our production, along with our beloved sponsor. And, or... you can begin commenting on essays and episodes and even join in some chats we have going on. So now that there are some turmoil in the world of regular social media, we've been hitting it hard on the Substack front. It's a little bit like old school blogging. Lots of room for comments, lots of chat, lots of space to talk amongst ourselves. So I will open up this episode for comments. And if you have thoughts of books, examples of books with great hooks, things you're wondering if are a hook, questions about hooks, we will be happy to take a look at those in the comments and, you know, start chatting.
Well, and head on over if you're interested to our hashtag AmWriting Facebook group, because there have been some very lively discussions over there, and we've been having some really cool discussions about partnerships. Specifically, a question came up yesterday about if you have a book coming out and you want to create a partnership with a bookstore for signed copies and things like that, how do you go about building that relationship? And I said in the comments, I said, we have an episode about that, episode 71, Building a Relationship with Your Bookstore with Mary Laura Philpott. And there's a big conversation in there happening about how you best go about cultivating those relationships. So come on over to the hashtag AmWriting Facebook group for more of those kind of fun conversations. And with
Just everywhere.
Yeah, it's just so much fun in there. All right. And with that, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Novelists, did you finish NaNoWriMo? Would you like to know what to do next with that pile of words you worked so hard to create? The coaches at NaNoWhat can help. Head to nanonowwhat.com to find free resources put together by a group of Author Accelerator certified book coaches to help you finish your draft or tackle a revision. And you can also check out their coaching options. You know we are huge fans of getting outside help with our drafts in all their various versions here at hashtag AmWriting. It is very hard to know what you have or what to do next with something you have worked so hard to make. The fantastic coaches at nanonowwhat.com can help you go from nano success to a draft that's actually ready to pitch or publish. Possibilities range from a single editorial letter to weekly or monthly coaching to get you through to where you want to be. And trust us when we tell you that the right help is a great investment in a writing career, and it also can help you find the joy in moving forward instead of spinning your wheels. Learn more at nanonowwhat.com and check the hashtag AmWriting podcast feed for a special December 2022 episode on what to do when you finish that first draft.